Sports Radio 1290, CFRW, Winnipeg.
I don't believe what I just saw.
A division of Bell Media.
Sports Radio 1290 presents the summer edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game.
Just a quick shot. Score! Just like that.
Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
You're actually trying to kill me in my ears here.
You're messing with our speakers, headphones. Here.
I'm not messing with anything. I'm trying not to go deaf in the next 2 hours, and you guys are cranking it up like we're at a, I don't know, Limp Bizkit concert.
He's back.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining live this evening at www.sportsradio1290.com, good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am back. I am your host, Drew Mandel. I was away last week.
You're back from Kentucky Fried Chicken.
I'm back from Kentucky. I did have some fried chicken, but that's neither here nor there.
Was it at Kentucky Fried Chicken?
It was not.
Was it original?
It wasn't KFC. Kenny
Rogers?
Honestly, why did I come back? I come back to this. This is what I come back to. You guys.
No, Drew, it's actually interesting because while you were gone, I formed a friendship. With your father.
With my father. Oh, good. This can't end poorly for me at all.
Who emails me all the time now.
You guys are BFFs?
Does he have BBM?
He does, and you're not getting the
I'll
the
get that. Oh, he has BBM?
He doesn't know how to use it, though.
Anyways, he emails me today about this hotel we booked for your bachelor party.
Yeah.
And I emailed him. I said, you know, Drew's also booked a hotel. You should speak to, you know, have you spoken to Drew? To which he replies, I speak to Drew daily. That's why he invited me to New York, I think.
Well, he is my father.
When you see him tonight, tell him what I've arranged. But yet, if he's spoken to you, why hasn't he told you what he's arranged?
See, the problem is I talk to him generally after 8 o'clock, and he's usually at least 3 bottles of wine deep at that point in time. So, you know, all bets are off as to if... Honestly, he picked me up at the airport when we got back on Monday night, and he sent me a BBM saying that he was waiting outside the terminal. And it was not written in any comprehensible language I've ever spoken. I don't know. He's like, yeah, I wrote that while I was sleeping in the car.
It was handwritten?
I don't know. He might be homeless. Honestly, I'm not 100% sure what's going on there. Anyways, welcome to the program. We have a jam-packed show for you this evening. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time from the Globe and Mail, James Myrtle is going to join us. Going to talk a little bit about the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, is this the year the Leafs are going to win the Cup?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah,
not.
Definitely.
I think the Leafs have a great chance to win the Cup this year. You know, they have a first line center. They have a number one netminder. They don't overpay their defense. Yeah, it's gonna be another year in Toronto, but it's gonna be interesting. And I think one of the things that should be interesting relative to the Winnipeg situation, of course, is Luke Shen's contract talks and whether or not they will have an effect on the Zach Bogosian negotiations. Of course, they can only have an effect, Drew, if he signs prior to Bogosian.
Exactly right. And so we'll have to wait and see. We'll talk to James Myrtle in about 10 minutes. Coming up after that, we're going to be joined. You just heard him on the air. He's going to join us as well. That's our good buddy, Gary Lawless, is going to join us.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was Jerry Lawler.
No, Gary Lawless, not Jerry Lawler. But it's a reasonable mistake to make. Anyways, Lawless is going to join us. He wrote, a hard-hitting column the other day about fighting in the NHL, and I tend to side with Gary, so we'll chat with Gary, see if we come up with some sort of agreement, and see if we're on the same page as it relates to fighting.
He had a good article about Rick Rippon as well the day before.
Exactly, and of course we'll talk about Mr. Rippon in a couple of minutes. And the last, we have Kyle Kozier, the Illegal Curve scouting correspondent, going to go deep into the Winnipeg Jets farm system. He's going to be on about 7 o'clock tonight, and then coming up at 7:30 tonight from the left coast from the Globe and Mail out in Vancouver, Matthew Sakaris is going to join us. So really a jam-packed program for you for the next 2 hours. Stay with us. You don't have to go anywhere else. You know, we like to have a lot of fun in the show in case you missed in case you didn't get it from the first 5 minutes. We like to have a lot of fun. We're all good friends here. There's some times in life where, you know, sports shouldn't be taken that seriously. And we always do take it too seriously. Just that's the nature. You get passionate about it. And there's been a number of incidents in the city of Winnipeg that's sort of sobering us up this summer. First, of course, Bombers, great start, terrific. Everybody's on the Bombers bandwagon. Then, you know, Coach Richard Harris passes away, and, you know, everybody sort of takes a step back and reflects, you know, it's just a game. You know, let's look at the most important things in life. You know, everybody's up on a high. The Jets are coming back to Winnipeg. The NHL's returned. And then, you know, this Rick Rippon tragedy, reared its ugly head earlier this week. I was in the, I mean, you BBM me, I was in the airport in Minneapolis when it happened. And, you know, his issues for lack of a better word, were well documented. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, they weren't documented in detail, but people knew about it.
People
around the hockey world, you know.
And the communities that he played in.
That's right. They see he's a guy who had his difficulties, and I mean, we can't pretend to understand it. You just have to sort of have to make the best of what is undoubtedly a terrible situation, and. From the Jets' standpoint, how do they go forward from this? How do they get better because of this? How does this help them? How can they help others who are going through the similar problems that that Rick Rippon was going through?
Well, you know, it's a very you mentioned the word difficult, and it's difficult, and it's also extremely tragic. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
You nailed it, Drew. I mean, this is a time when it's not really a sports issue. It just becomes, you know, a human being who was going through difficulties and unfortunately, you know, passed away, revolving around them. Obviously, when something like this happens, it's very difficult. You know, we're only 3 days. Rick passed away on Monday night, but as far as, you know, how the Jets are going to deal with it and how the Jets and the NHL and the hockey world and the sports world can learn from it. And I mean, it's clear that there is an issue that isn't being addressed enough, that being, you know, mental illness or depression. Mm-hmm. or both. I mean, cause you know, depression, there's many types of mental illness, but you know, the Free Press, I thought, actually did a really good job. Gary Lawless, Ed Tate, you know, other writers for the Free Press covering it. I mean, if you look at the stats, I mean, depression, mental illness, it affects, you know, roughly 1 in 4 people. I don't have the exact number, but it's roughly that. And so you have to translate that to any industry. It could be, you know, the trucking industry, but in this case, the hockey world. So the Jets obviously, you know, signed Rick Rippon. He was very well known to the True North organization. You know, Craig Heisinger basically found this guy playing in the WHL, and, you know, he ended up playing on the Moose for 5 years. He was one of the, you know, the guys that played for the Moose for the longest. Very well-respected guy, very tough guy. What you heard a lot around the hockey world was that he was pound for pound one of the toughest guys, but once again, it's not really about hockey. It's about that he was a good human being, and, you know, the Jets are definitely, I shouldn't say definitely, but I believe they will honor him, and he'll be kind of, you know, at the forefront of their thoughts throughout the entire year, because he was signed and he was going to be part of the team. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a very tough, complex issue, but I hope that, you know, mental illness is maybe looked at in a different light and it's taken not more seriously, but maybe it's approached in a different way. And you know, in a time like this, obviously it's a tragic thing for Rick Rippon and his family and friends have to deal with, but it's not necessarily about things like this. It's not about blame or anything like that or why. It's about how do you move forward and, right, and how do you make things better for people that are suffering mental illness, because it's the type of thing where mental illness is not something that is just, you know, fixed with a conversation with a loved one. It's something that you know takes time, whether it's therapy or what have you. So I hope that you know that the entire sports world really learns from, you know, the incidents that have happened, you know, including Derek Boogaard and Rick Rippon, who Gary Lawless wrote about. You know, both of their deaths were, you know, in pretty close proximity. So I hope that the hockey world maybe approaches the issue, and, you know, basically someone's life can be saved in the future going ahead.
You know, I think if it takes stigma, and this is in all aspects of life, and I mean, if it takes away the stigma around depression, that is probably the best case scenario of a terrible occurrence here. If it means that people in the dressing room can talk about it, and if it means people in everyday life can talk about it, if it means that people, you know, in society can be honest and can talk about it and get the help that, you know, is it often available? It needs to be more available, you know, and that's through, you know, funding and everything else and all that, you know, for another day and time sort of conversation. But that's the only silver lining to this awful occurrence.
Right. You have to learn from the past.
Right.
And so if it means, you know, surveying all the NHL teams and finding out more information about not only the players but how to help and speaking to experts and doing something like that, you know, maybe it's a reaction to something, but it's a reaction to something to make it not happen in the future. And that's the key here, is not, you know, we've seen two tragedies, we can't see three.
And the thing is, Richie, you know, psychology in sports has been around for forever.
Right.
But unfortunately, when sports psychologists are traditionally around teams, it's about how to, you know,
that's right,
put them in the right mindset to, for them to win, you know, visualization techniques and all that stuff. But unfortunately, you know, something like having a psychologist around the team to do interviews periodically throughout the year, because, you know, unfortunately, you know, mental illness is something that is not as visible as, you know, a broken toe or something like that. That's something that, you know, you can easily,
you're right.
I mean, you know, everyone suffers through dark times, but unfortunately there's a difference between your you know, odd dark time and having a mental illness which prevents you from getting up in the morning and all those negative side effects that come with this disease, right?
Every athlete is readily available within the within a snap of a finger can get an MRI.
Right.
And they can get all that. They can get all the tools to fix you physically,
and which have high costs.
Yeah,
and probably cost more than it would to have provided them with mental health.
Of course, but there's never any, like as you said about sports psychology. It's never for, it's always for winning, never for surviving, as it is. You know, on behalf of the entire Legal Curve family here, we send our condolences to the entire team. I mean, Mr. Rippon's family, to the team at True North Sports and Entertainment, and by all accounts, the hockey world has lost a great person, and a family lost a son, and everything else. And we send our condolences. When we come back, James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail. Richie's nodding his approval on the song choice.
Little Bruce.
Yeah, I know. You do like, you like Little Bruce, the rapper, right? Isn't there
fire,
a rapper
fire,
named Little
right?
Bryce?
That's fire.
Little Bruce?
Yeah. Little Bruce. Little Wayne Drew.
I know Little Wayne. I thought there was
Little Bruce.
There should be a
Little Bruce.
Bruce.
I like your, like, little brother.
Timmy, are you ready to go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline? Let's do it.
Little Bruce?
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program from the Globe and Mail, James Myrtle. James, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, guys. How are things there?
Well, it's another beautiful day in Winnipeg. You know, not really hockey weather, but that's okay. We can handle that up until about October 9th or so.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that's going to be quite a day. I'd love to be there to see that atmosphere.
Well, you know, I'm sure, you know, if the Globe won't send you, you know, I'm sure you can just, you know, fork over the flight. The flight will be cheap, and then the ticket will only be about $5,000 a pop. No problem there.
Oh, maybe I can get a press pass or something like that if I fly out there.
Yeah, man, you use your connections in that manner.
It
seems reasonable to me, if you ask me, but that sounds like a good
press
deal.
Pass, Drew.
Exactly. James, we want to talk a lot about the Leafs, but we want to start with obviously the more somber occurrence of the week in the NHL, and that's the passing of Rick Rippon. You wrote a lot about it for the Globe. You sort of headed the coverage there. You know, what can the NHL learn from the passing? You know, do you expect that, you know, we've heard that they're going to do some changes to the behavioral you know, system they have in place already. What do you think the end result of this is going to be from a hockey perspective?
You know, I actually think, looking at everything that was done and listening to Mike Gillis talk the next day, you know, I think they did a lot for Rick Rippon. You know, he had the leaves of absence whenever he needed them. He had a lot of different doctors working with him. You know, it wasn't a case where this was hidden away and was sort of kept from everyone. Other than in the public sense, I mean, the team knew, and the league knew, and the union knew, and everyone was trying to help Rippon, and everyone thought he had been helped. You know, I thought Mike Gillis was very sincere when he said that he thought things had turned around, and he felt very positive about the direction that Rippon was going in his life. And I think a lot of people in the hockey world were very shocked that it came to that, especially because he had sounded so happy when he signed in Winnipeg, you know, only a month ago. So it's really tough, you know. And you know, I had the unfortunate task of being one of probably the first person to tell a lot of people what had happened, and it didn't make for an easy couple of days for me either, because I was talking to a lot of people who knew Rick, and going on the radio and having to talk about him and his life a lot this week. So it's been a long week for me.
Yeah, James, you certainly did a good job of that, and we're going to transition to a lighter topic, that being the Toronto Maple Leafs, the team that you cover for the Globe. And Luke Shen is a guy who's been talked about a lot, probably more so this summer than he was throughout the entire season in Toronto, although he had a nice bounce-back year. Can you update us on progress in terms of negotiation between Shen's representatives and the Leafs?
It's really quiet. You know, they're not talking very much. Brian Burke doesn't like to talk while the negotiation's going on, and Don Meehan is sort of the same way. So we're not hearing a lot. I think the problem is I think the Leafs would like to get him locked up long term, but the problem is that, you know, he's such a young guy. There's not really a lot of comparables for what Luke Shen's done. I mean, how many 21-year-old stay-at-home defensemen have played as many games as he has on, admittedly, a poor team, but he's played a pretty big role. You know, last year he was in the top four. He played over 22 minutes a night, and to do that at his age is pretty remarkable. So he's a tough guy to gauge in terms of what you pay him, and if they're looking at a five-year contract, which is going to go into his unrestricted free agency years, how much money do you give him? You know, how good is Luke Shen going to be? And I don't think... I can't really answer that question yet. I don't know how good he's going to be. I think probably the top end for him is someone like Adam Foote, and if the Leafs can get a player like that who can put up 30 points and be one of the better defensive players in the league, that would be phenomenal. And, you know, he would be worth $4 or $5 million a year. Luke's not there yet, though. I mean, he's a really young guy, and he's still sort of growing, and he worked out all summer with Shea Weber, which I think is a great sign. And he's got a ways to go before he gets to the Foote kind of defenseman. For what he's done right now, I think he's probably only worth a contract somewhere in the $3 million a year range. But, you know, we'll see. It all depends how many years he gets. I think it's probably going to be a three-year deal or a five-year deal, and I'm leaning more towards the three-year deal.
My next question for you is actually the ceiling you saw for Shen, so that was nice that you obviously provided some insight into that. So then I guess another question I may have is, Zach Bogosian also in a similar situation, you know, right-handed shooting defenseman, same draft year, another top five pick. Do you see those negotiations playing off one another? Whoever signs first, the other team has a better idea of what that player should be owed?
Yeah, I think so. They're different players. You know, I think Bogosian has maybe a little bit more offense, and he struggled a little bit defensively. You know, I know that Atlanta used him in a defensive role, but, you know, you look at it, his minus numbers are up there, and I think that, you know, they asked a lot of him, and he's got some growing to do. So, you know, I would think that Shen might be just a little bit higher than Bogosian, but you're right. I mean, they're similar guys because they're from the same draft year. They're both very high picks. They're both defensemen. And they're both coming off their entry-level deals. So, I think that whoever signs first, that number probably is going to be used as a comparable.
James, we want to ask you quickly about Matthew Lombardi. The Leafs obviously acquired him from the Nashville Predators along with Cody Franzen. There were some reports today that Lombardi's health was improving. He has had concussion issues. Our question is for you, is he getting better? And do you ever really know if a player is getting better as it relates to concussions?
It's tough to know. You know, I get asked that all the time about Sidney Crosby, and I don't think Sidney Crosby knows if he's going to be ready for training camp or he's going to be ready for the first game of the season. And I think Matthew Lombardi is in the same boat. I mean, there's a guy that hasn't played a game since the beginning of last season. You know, that's a lot of hockey to miss for somebody. And the fact that the Predators gave up on him the way they did and for essentially no return at all just to get rid of his salary, I think that says to me that there are questions over how effective he's going to be able to be and how many games he's going to be able to play. I think the Leafs will be happy if they can get half a season out of Matthew Lombardi this year, really, honestly. And, you know, while there's been some optimism and he's getting better, which is great, there's a big difference between that and being able to play in the NHL. So we'll know a lot more when training camp gets going. If he's actually there and on the ice, that's going to be a fantastic sign. My guess is that he won't be and that he's probably going to miss the first 10 or 20 games of the season at least.
It's nice to be in a position that the Leafs are where they can pay a guy for a lot of money for 50 games, knowing that that's probably a ceiling. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail. James, in the Toronto Maple Leafs' constant search for goaltending, the path has led them to Manitoba's own James Reimer. Does he really have what it takes to be a bona fide number one in the NHL?
That's a really tough question. That's the question that defines the Leafs season, really, because if he can play like he did last year in half season over a full season, I think the Leafs can make the playoffs. But, you know, that's a huge if, though. It's a gigantic if. You know, we've seen, I always think of Steve Mason, and, you know, he had that great season for Columbus, got them into the playoffs, won the Calder Trophy, and ever since he's just been a shadow of that goalie that he was that first season. So, you know, I love James Reimer as a person. I mean, he's one of the nicest people I've ever met in pro sports, one of the most genuine people. And I love covering him and writing about his story because it's so amazing. And if he does turn out to be one of the better goalies in the NHL this season over a full year and the Leafs make the playoffs, I think James Reimer is going to be one of the best stories in the NHL in probably since the lockout. You know, a lot of people probably don't know his story maybe outside of Manitoba. I'm sure you guys do. But, I mean, this is a guy that didn't even play organized hockey until he's 12 years old. And for him to be where he is now and be as good as he is now is really remarkable. And I hope that if he does struggle, that it doesn't get to him and that it doesn't sort of bring him down. And that he's able to keep going. Because, you know, even if he ends up to be a decent NHL backup, that's pretty remarkable for where he came from. So, I mean, to answer your question, I'm not really sure what James Reimer. I think he's going to struggle at times this year, and he's going to be pushed by some of the guys that are behind him.
James, you know, we spoke about Matthew Lombardi earlier, but, I mean, the reason for that trade seemed to be the Leafs' acquisition of Cody Franzen. An offensive defenseman, maybe not the most fleet of foot. How do you see the team utilizing Franzen next season?
No, I think to start with, he's going to be a guy they're going to put on the third pairing and on the second power play unit, much the same as he did in Nashville. You know, I'd be surprised if they decide to play him more than that just because he's limited. You know, people here are really excited about Cody Franzen, and I think they think they're getting a much better player than they are. He's a good player. He's a useful player. He's especially useful on the power play, and I think he could evolve into a guy that's going to be on your first power play unit at some point. But in his own end, Franzen struggles, and, you know, those struggles are going to be evident in Toronto where, you know, if they decide to play him a lot more than the Predators did. So, you know, those are the questions I have with Franzen, and I guess we'll see. You know, the Toronto's depth on defense is a little bit questionable to me because I don't think they've got a lot of guys that are really great in their own end. You know, Shen's probably the top stay-at-home guy they got. Keith Ollie hasn't had much of a career so far, and we don't know what he's going to be able to do. And after that, you know, it could be bad news for Toronto.
You know, I can't speak for Drew or Richie or Remus, but as far as I'm concerned, John Michael Lyles, you know, was under-the-radar signing, as far as I'm concerned, right?
Right.
And, you know, I guess the question is, how good do you think he can be for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and how much are they expecting out of him?
He's going to play a lot, you know, and it was interesting. I talked to some people in Colorado about Lyles, and they had great things to say about him. And, you know, there was some speculation, I know, from the media there, from the Denver Post writer Adrian Dater, that Lyles might have been the next captain of the Avalanche. That says a lot about the kind of guy that he is. Lyle's biggest problem is he's a small guy. I mean, he's 5'9 or 5'10, and another player that's not that great in his own end. And, you know, I think pairing him with Shen as part of a pairing that's going to do a lot of the work that the Cavrilla-Shen pairing did last year, I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I think Lyles can probably adequately replace Cavrilla and maybe be a little bit better just because he's younger and sort of on the right part of his curve in terms of his potential. So we'll see with him, too. You know, I think it was a good move because the Leafs really didn't have to give up all that much to get him.
James, last question here. The big, you know, free agent signing that the Leafs made was getting Tim Connolly, you know, 2 years, $9 million. What's the pressure going to be like on Connolly to perform, and how short is his leash?
Well, the problem with saying that he's on a short leash is there's not really anyone to come in and replace him on that first line. So I think he's going to get, you know, a lot of time in that role alongside Phil Kessel to make something happen. And, you know, I feel like I'm one of the people out there that's defending Tim Connolly and sort of that has his back a little bit because, you know, aside from all the injury problems, which are very substantial, I mean, he's been one of the more injured players in the league in the 4 or 5 years. Aside from that, I think he's a pretty useful player. You know, he drew a lot of criticism in Buffalo because he is a little bit soft and he's not a big bruising kind of guy, but he's a very talented playmaker, and I think we're going to see some really pretty plays between him and Kessel this year. You know, I worry about that line because I don't think they're not going to be very good defensively because Lupo and Kessel are both weak defensively. So they're going to have to try and not use them against players that can burn them. But other than that, the Leafs are stronger down the middle than they were last year, which isn't hard because they were one of the worst teams down the middle last season.
I'm glad you said it. I was about to say it. James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail, hopefully we'll catch you in Winnipeg sometime this season.
Yeah, sounds good, guys.
Okay, take care, James. Thanks very much. Just, you know, when you cover the Leafs on a... It says something about you as a writer, as a quality of a writer, when you cover the biggest team in Canada, the biggest team in hockey on a day-to-day basis, and James is always brings the goods.
Yeah, and James has been writing previews for each team now. I don't think he's got to the Jets, but I think he's covered the Oilers, the Canucks,
Jets
the Leafs, and the Habs. So, yeah, the Jets are Friday, according to Richie. So he's been doing a great job. He writes a lot. He's been writing a lot over the summer. One of our favorite guests, great writer. So it's good to have him on.
Exactly. Let's head to break. Another one of our favorite guests is coming up right after these. That's Gary Lawless. You know him from Hustler and Lawless and the Winnipeg Free Press. Stay with us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show
on Sports Radio 1290.
I can't believe that anybody would admit to being your girl, Ezzy.
That was hurtful.
Well, you know, it wasn't hurt. I said it with love, that's all.
That was mean.
It was mean.
Yeah,
it was mean. With the cowboy.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know what? We make it all the way to your 50th birthday party, and look what happens.
Exactly. Let's go to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Gary, turn your radio down, please.
My radio's off.
Okay, well, why are you in a train then?
I'm driving out to my cottage to do some work, and my carpenter buddy has, for some reason, got the windows down and the air off, and we're on Route 90, and it's loud. They're doing construction work. He's taking the hint. He's rolling the windows up.
Well, that's a good buddy. Not only is he doing carpentry for you, but he's also willing to let you use the AC. That's what I call the Winnipeg Free Press. Thank you for joining us, as always, here. It's been a while since we had you on, Gary.
You guys have your little brotherhood there of fellows, and this guy's the only guy in town that is of the same lineage as me. He's half Italian, half Irish, so that we're the only two guys walking around. So, yeah, he looks after me, I look after him.
For a while, I thought you were talking about Jesus, Gary.
Yeah, well, you know.
The carpenter friend.
He's on our side, too.
That's good. Gary, you wrote, you always write great columns in the Free Press. I don't need to blow smoke. But, the one that you wrote after the passing of Rick Rippon, where you really sort of went after the hockey as the bare knuckle fighting in hockey, I thought was especially poignant. Isn't it time, shouldn't the tall foreheads of the NHL put the health of their players ahead of, appealing to a small minority of fans?
I want to tell you that I do not always have that viewpoint. And I started writing about professional hockey in Thunder Bay. I covered the Colonial Hockey League. And, it was one step above Slapshot on many nights. And I watched the fighting, and I enjoyed it, and looked for it, had a bit of a lust for it, I'll be very honest. And as time has gone on, and I've become aware of the detrimental effects of it, and seen some of the heroes of my youth, Stan Jonathan, become diminished and not the men that I remember. I know that age has a toll on everyone, but we're talking about something completely different here. I've come to look at it and to try and figure out what was the common element, and the common element was that they were fighters in the National Hockey League. And it has... it's devastating. Psychologically, what it does to people, physically what it does to people, emotionally what it does to people, takes a terrible, terrible toll. And you can tell me that they sign up for it, they know what they're getting into. Well, that doesn't make it okay. And you can tell me that fans like it. Well, I'm sure there are some fans out there that would like it if there was a murder once a night in the game. That wouldn't be okay. It has to end. It has to end now. And the people that run the NHL, they need to look in the mirror and determine what they want to be.
Gary, knowing that these hockey fans out there, and there are a lot of them that still like fighting, and knowing that the NHL has been very slow to make any changes to any rules regarding fighting, do you think it's going to be well to increase penalties against fighting, whether it's in-game or after-game, or is it as simple as they need to take it out just, you know, directly?
It's a fallacy, guys. I don't believe for a second that people buy tickets to National Hockey League games just because of the fighting. Are you telling me that if you took fighting out of the game, you'd sell less tickets in Vancouver, in Toronto, in Edmonton, in Ottawa, in Winnipeg, in Montreal? Of course you wouldn't. Detroit, Chicago, those places, the places that New York City, the one place where I think you might be able to make a bit of an argument that taking fighting out of the game could affect their bottom line is Philadelphia. The rest, listen, are you going to tell me that you need to do things because that serves the needs of Florida and Tampa? Those markets don't drive things. You need to look at the markets that drive the league economically and say, what happens if we do something here? And the answer is unequivocally no. Taking fighting out of the game will not affect the bottom line in any of the real hockey markets that matter.
Gary, what about this? You know, teams seem to employ players who are strictly on the bench to fight, as opposed to, you know, players who play the game like Jerome McGinley, who drop the gloves, you know, whether it be at a self-defense or to make a point, and they don't do it very often, but they do so with a purpose. To me, it seems like it's a fundamental problem at the coaching level, that coaches feel the need to ice these, you know, one-dimensional players, as opposed to hockey players who occasionally fight and who aren't 260 pounds and only fight other 260-pound guys. They're another 200 pounds or 195 soaking wet, and they're fighting other guys their size. They're probably not that good at it, so they probably don't injure the other guy as much, and then that you know, creates less of an issue in terms of head injuries.
Listen, they spent all this time talking about concussions last year, and said that they wanted to solve them, they wanted to get them out of the game, et cetera, and yet you make allowance for guys to bare-knuckle fight on the ice, and with the risk of falling on the ice and banging your head on the ice. Like, it's completely counterintuitive to say you want to get concussions out of the game, but then leave fighting in the game. It's they're competing agendas. What? And you know, your point about the coaching, there's lots of coaches that don't want to have to employ that type of player. But if another team has it, their GM thinks, or someone in their organization thinks, if they have one, we have to have one.
Well,
coaches don't tap players on the shoulder anymore. It doesn't happen.
Well, they look at them, and they don't have any kind of accountability down the road, so they don't, you know, they never hold, you know, similar to the Crawford and issue with Todd Bertuzzi. But I guess, Gary, another question is, and I think this is a valid question. I mean, I think if you take the one-dimensional fighter out of the game and then just leave fighting in the game itself, don't you think that will reduce the possibility of stick violations? Because people are going to do things that are reactionary regardless. Wouldn't you rather somebody drop the gloves and go after somebody as opposed to stick them in the head?
No. Like, Matt Cook does whatever he wants to do anyways. There's all kinds of guys that go out there and don't fear any reprisal. Brad Marchand, there's all kinds of players that play on the edge, as we like to call it, and do whatever they want. I think that the threat of this violence, you know, it has an effect on a small number of players. Lots of players play however they're going to play with it, and that does not stop them.
You know, from my perspective, I mean, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I think it has to do a lot with hockey, and it has a lot to do with football. I'm not a parent, as far as I know. No one in this room is. I mean, Gary, you are. You know, if you had your son, and your son came to you and said he wants to play hockey, and you know everything about the game, and your son gets good at hockey, and he gets into a situation where there's contact and everything, how comfortable are you in putting your son out there, or telling your son to pursue a career in hockey, or football, for that matter, and not expecting there to be long-term health damage done to him?
Well, I think, you know, I'm a very new parent, and I can't really talk from much experience, but I can talk from being a son. And my dad always sort of said, you know, we'll try and give you the best direction. At the end of the day, you're going to make your own decisions. So, you know, I don't think you can keep your child from, if your child wants to be in ballet, they're going to be in ballet. They want to be in hockey, they're going to be in hockey. Would I want my son to be a fighter in the Western Hockey League and then try and get a job in the NHL? Absolutely not. Would I counsel him against it? 100%. Depending on the child, would I forbid it? Maybe, you know.
And I think, and your answer, I think, shows that why there's a fundamental problem with the game now. Now, did that problem always exist? You know, maybe to some extent. But given everything we know about concussions and everything we know about head injuries and all the ramifications as a result thereof, it's harder from a parent in good conscience putting your child in that line of fire. That, and that, to me, is something that should give every, you know, football and hockey especially, it should give them pause going forward.
I hate the college game. I go down and watch a few games at UND every once in a while, you know, or a few games in other places. I hate it. I don't like the stick work. I think it's vicious, and on and on and on. If I had a child, and you know they were that good, I'd want them to go play college hockey where they had a mask
right.
on,
right.
a cage on, and they weren't allowed to fight.
So I mean, so you know, so the stick work, you know, stick work is lesser of two evils when you know between that and you know what we see in the you know Western Hockey League with the fisticuffs.
I don't know why they can't eliminate both.
No, they should be able to. You know how you eliminate both? And I mean, we've said this on this program ad nauseum. You take away the body armor.
Right.
Those guys are wearing
sure.
body armor.
Yeah.
I mean,
the game is growing in popularity. There's all kinds of great things about hockey. And someone said this, someone told me the other day, it's an oversimplification. But that Olympic hockey is the best hockey we see.
Absolutely.
Why don't we pursue that? Why don't we make that what we want to be? Because I could watch that 80 nights a year, no problem.
And Gary, I would have to say that even though I agree with your points against fighting, but I actually want fighting to stay in hockey. We won't get into all those reasons, but...
Well, no, of course we will. Why, Ezra? Tell me.
I want to say why I believe that fighting won't be taken out anytime in the near future, and it partly explains why I'm for it. The NHL is very much an old boys club, and you know that, and fighting has always been part of hockey.
Yeah.
And I think when you take out hockey, this goes back to Richie's question for you, there's just going to be too much of a backlash for people within the sport who are going to basically think that the entire nature of the sport is being attacked by taking fighting out. And then you have absolutely...
Problem, this is a problem that we're going to let Don Cherry and, you know, I'm not going to say Brian Burke and Jeremy Jacobs and Ed Snyder because, you know, I don't know their viewpoints, but we all know Don Cherry's viewpoint. So this is, we're going to let Don Cherry be the architect of where our game goes. We say it's our game. Why don't we say to Hockey Canada, get rid of fighting? Because Hockey Canada can get rid of fighting. They can make fighting, they can ban fighting from all levels of hockey in Canada other than the American Hockey League and the National Hockey League. And if there's no fighting in Major Junior, who's going to fight in the NHL?
If there's no fighting in Junior, I would agree.
Junior's worse than the NHL, though. It's dirtier than the NHL.
So let's get rid of it.
I don't disagree. You have to grab...
Why are we letting our 16- and 17-year-old boys go away from home and live in Portland or Brandon or wherever and let the operator of that team sell tickets to their games and encourage or educate our boys to fight in hockey?
You know, Gary, I agree with you 100% here. We're on the same page. And I think the problem, another problem that people have or that we need to get over is the terms that we use. We have to stop saying the words concussion. We have to say the word brain damage. Because if you get a report, if you read in your local paper that so-and-so on whatever team is out for at least a week to 10 days with brain damage, I think people will start will take pause at that a little bit quicker than they will concussion.
That's an excellent point, Drew. I wonder what will happen if I, in my duties this year, write that, you know, so-and-so is out for a week with brain damage. I wonder if I'll get a call from the NHL saying, well, that's not what the trainer said. They told you that he had concussion, post-concussion syndrome. You know, like, I wonder where will the line get drawn you know, where will the spin start on that?
Gary, now's the time. Now's the time, Gary, true, too, because your best player in the world may not be ready for training camp. He might be out for more than 6 months, whatever it was.
He might never play again.
Yeah,
and he shouldn't.
This is not the time to address it with your best player sidelined. If Michael Jordan was sidelined with a concussion in basketball, you can be sure there would be a serious investigation into it, and they would start putting in new rules. Why not take that opportunity right now? Now is the best chance to do it.
And, you know, if you're Sidney Crosby's parents, and Gary, we got to go in a couple minutes. If you're Sidney Crosby's parents, you can't tell me that they're not saying to their son, you know, Sid, you know, your health, your life is worth more than going rushing back. And if he gets tapped again, he's going to suffer more brain damage. I mean, the studies...
Go ahead, Gary. Well, we said this the other night on our show that, you know, there's lots of talk about how his parents interfered a little bit. Now's the time to interfere, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, it's not interfering. No. It's looking after the best interests of your kid.
Sure, fine. Say whatever you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, but now's the time to sort of say, you know, listen, I want to watch Sidney Crosby chase the record books. I want to watch him win another Stanley Cup. I want him watch him win another gold medal. I'd like to be there. You know, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
But not at the cost of him getting whacked again and ending up a diminished human being. I don't want to see that.
We'll leave it there, Gary. Appreciate the time as always. Good conversation.
Thanks, fellas.
Take care, Gary.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Gary. Take care. We're well over time, so let's go to break. When we come back, maybe we'll spend a couple more minutes on this. Maybe we'll open up phone lines. We'll see. 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Shortly before 7 p.m., welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That was a real good chat with Gary, and we've threw open the phone lines, and we've had some response from it already. So why don't we head to the phone lines and start. Dave in St. James, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, Dave. You heard the conversation. What were your initial thoughts?
You know, I wasn't too impressed with it. I mean, like, literally, it made me sick just listening to it. I know he's got his own opinion and stuff like that, but I don't know what background this guy's from. I don't know if he's ever played the game before, but usually that kind of opinion I hear is mainly from guys who aren't involved in the game in terms of coaching or playing, you know? And, I played the game for over 15 years. I played junior hockey. You know, I've been asked to be a fighter and stuff like that. I turned it down, but, in today's game, you have to be fast. It's a skill. It's turning into becoming a skilled game. And he started talking. I heard him talk about the Olympics, how he'd like to watch that game. Well, when you watch the Olympics, you got probably, like with Team Canada, you got the top 20, best 20 players from the NHL, right, from everywhere else. They're not necessarily, plus you're all allowed to fight, but it's not about that. You know, he's saying it's for the fans involved. Well, of course the fans like fighting. I mean, everybody likes fighting, but that's not the point. When you see a fight, it's because it's either trying to make a momentum shift or, say, guy hit my buddy from behind, and then you go in and protect your buddy, and you kind of say, no, you can't be doing this anymore. Like, a lot of hits from behind, if somebody can go in and drop the gloves, you straighten it out because that stops more of that stuff from happening. I coach 15, 16-year-olds, yeah, and a lot of times when I see games get out of hand, it's either because the referee lets it go out of hand,
that's right,
or because you're not allowed to take matters into your own hands, and that's when you see, if a guy gets in from behind, well, the only way to square up with that guy is another guy from behind. You know, and he said that we're going by Don Cherry's model. Well, Don Cherry isn't, there are those gladiator hockey leagues out there, but that's not what Don Cherry's promoting.
Well, Dave, I think this is the
appreciate
issue.
The call, Dave. Thanks very much.
I agree with most of what Dave said in terms of, retribution. If you don't have fighting in the game, it gets dangerous. That's why I want fighting in the game. I just think the NHL coaches, and by the way, the smart coaches now aren't employing these guys. If you watch the playoffs, none of these only guys who can only fight play. They never play because they're useless. So let me just finish here. So they don't play. Right now, there's a lot of teams that waste a roster spot on a player who can't add anything except for a fight. And so George Larac went out there. He could hardly move. He went out there. He fought Derek Bougard,
Yeah.
May he rest in peace. He'd fight him. He'd come back on the ice. He'd sit there 5 minutes. It wouldn't change the momentum at all. He'd come back on the ice. He'd have two shifts, easy shifts in the offensive zone, or come back off, and that was it. And you're paying this. They're paying Montreal. What, they paid him like $1 million to play. What's the purpose? You don't need those guys in the game because they don't do anything.
I thought
you need fighting in the game because if you don't fight in the game, as David said,
A hit from behind is going to be matched with a hit from behind. You're going to see broken necks. Yep. A slash is going to be matched by a slash in the face. I think fighting should be in the game. I think coaches and GMs, I think, are starting to realize that the one-dimensional fighter, that's in the past now.
I happen to agree with Richie, and I think that what Richie's trying to get at is that fighting should be spontaneous and should serve a purpose.
Right.
It should not be staged. And as far as I'm concerned, the main reason why I am in favor of fighting in hockey, hockey's an aggressive game. It always has been. Concussions are not new. And if you look at the statistics, the majority of concussions aren't involving fighting. They're involving hits from behind. Don't get me wrong. Fighting is gruesome. It's violent. But hockey is a violent game. And I realize that at the international level, it's not. But in Canada, we don't play the same type of game as they do in other countries. So, I mean,
there are
a lot of people that have arguments against fighting. And I think for the most part, those arguments are sophisticated and are usually correct. But unfortunately, this is a sport that is unique in that guys are skating at fast speeds with basically weapons being sticks or elbows, like you talk about. So, unfortunately, hockey is old school. It's an old school sport, and fighting's part of it. And I would have to say that I want it to stay in the game, but I want it to stay in the game like it was in the olden days when a guy like Gordie Howe, who was one of the most talented players, he would stick up for himself. He would do his own fighting.
And he didn't
have Dave Semenko or another guy like that.
But Semenko could play a bit.
Yep.
Semenko could play a bit.
Let's go to
line. You guys can't skate.
Let's go to Brian in the North End on line two. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi.
How you doing, Brian? You disagree. I think you and I are sort of on the same page. You're saying that the science is telling us obviously that that you know the brain the damage that is being caused to the brain by fighting.
Absolutely, and I believe that all sports are evolving in a way that science is becoming a bigger part of the sport. In the way that they train athletes, the way that they prepare them physically, mentally, in all aspects of the game, and clinging to fighting is in a sense is keeping a part of the game that really is long term is going to prove eventually that is extremely damaging to these athletes, and I think it's pretty short sighted to think that you know sticking up for your buddy because you got cross checked from behind in front of the net or something like that is retribution or that effect. I guess the point is that more and more of this violence has to be eliminated if you're going to protect these athletes. And it's starting, you know, at young ages.
How do you do that?
Well, the hitting from behind, for one, is the example the last caller used. That kind of stuff has to be dealt with more severely because, again, that's, you know, these are kids who are getting slammed into the boards and having head injuries at 13, 14 years old.
Yeah, I agree.
And the effects of that are, you know, irreversible. I mean, it's... Maybe I don't have the, facts behind it, but I think in the long term, this kind of evidence will come out.
Brian, you're right. I actually agree with everything you're saying, and the science is evolving. Players are, and everyone agrees with this. Athletes in general, and hockey's no different.
And you know, don't get me wrong. In no way am I suggesting that hockey shouldn't be a tough sport and that guys shouldn't be able to play hard and be physical, but. There's got to be, I guess, a little more recognition and respect among the players and the fans and the people involved in the game. And again, it's not just hockey. It might be soccer. It could be football. It could be, I guess, any form of physical sport in that sense.
Brian, appreciate the call. Thanks very much.
Hey, thanks.
Let's go to commercial. We're going to push back Kyle 15 minutes. We'll do a couple more calls on this. Craig and West K, you're next up after the break. Andrew, you're right up after him. 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.